And so what this culture does with its attempts to control everything is to destroy all possibility of relationship. You know, I've heard this culture called a kleptocracy, that is a government base that has as its fundamental operating principle theft, and that's true. I've also described this culture as sociopathological, and I've described this age we live in as a sociopathine, the age of the sociopaths, because this culture is really run by sociopaths. I think an argument could be made, and I think this is true, that the fundamental operating principle of this culture is enslavement. This culture is about enslaving everyone and everything, and it's based on forcing the world, bending the entire world to the will of this culture. It's based on how do you force a river to give you its energy? How do you force the wind to give you its energy at this point? How do you force forests to give you all of their bodies? How do you force salmon to give you all of their bodies? How do you force everything to go the way you want? I mean, science is based on, and let's go further back than science. I mean, we have the Bible talks about subduing the earth. What is subduing? Subduing is enslaving. It talks about, and that's what agriculture is taking the entire habitat and converting it into your use, enslaving the habitat. They're enslaving the entire world is what this culture is about. And I think that this is one reason, I know this is a big jump, but bear with me. This is a big reason I think that this culture dismisses dreams. And I'm going to go back a step too. And I sometimes think about St. Augustine's line about the unruly penis and how I read this in, I think this might have been Susan Griffin, was talking about how this is one of the things that this culture hates, that the patriarchy fundamentally hates. Patriarchy leads us into a very, very strange relationship with sex in that it is something of a love-hate relationship. And, you know, the word fuck is just a perfect example of this, that the same word that means do great violence to means make love to. That's Jane Caputi was the one who pointed out that it's all a patriarchy condensed to four letters. And then I come back to St. Augustine's line about the unruly penis, that's one of the reasons that patriarchy ultimately hates sex is because the penis isn't controllable in that one can at one stage in one's life get an erection when one doesn't really want to. At other stages of one's life, one can't get an erection when one does want to. And one can't control. There is the phrase premature ejaculation. One can't always control when one has or does not have an orgasm. And that's really bad when you have an entire culture based on control and based on everything bending to our will. And there's a lot more to this culture's hatred of sex and hatred, especially of women, but that's one part. And let's go back to dreams. That one of the things that is so magical and wonderful about dreams is that they're not controllable. You are out of control in a dream and you can't even control whether you do or don't dream. And this is one of the wonderful things about art too, is that I can want to write a piece and I can't make it happen. I can't I can't beat a piece into submission. I can't force it to come. I can write words, but I can't make them beautiful and I can't make them good. They either come or they don't, and they're on their own volition. And I often think about writing like a dog following a scent. And I can search around for the scent, but if the scent isn't there, I can't fabricate the scent. And what I'm getting at is why were the Talua able to live here for 12,500 years without destroying the place? One of the reasons is because they didn't try to force the place into their image of what the place should be. They accepted what the place gave willingly. That's the definition of sustainable, both in a social relationship to the land and also in an interpersonal relationship. Those who've read my work know that my father was extremely abusive. My brother has epilepsy from blows to the head. He broke my sister's arm. He raped my mother, my sister, and me. And even as a child, I was thinking that, yes, he was, like, my sister was beaten for not washing the dishes correctly. And he guaranteed that in the short term, she would wash the dishes more carefully. But the cost was at the cost of a relationship. And what we, you know, Richard Dawkins has this great line about science bases its claims to truth on its spectacular ability to make matter and energy jump through hoops on command. And that's absolutely true. The reason we know that science works is because when I flip a switch, the lights will go on. We can make matter and energy jump through hoops on command. But he's done something very sneaky there, which is he has conflated how we know something is true. That's a very epistemology. How you know something is true with domination. And think about it for a second. Let's say you and I are in the same room, and let's say I point a gun at you, and I have a hoop in my hand, and I say, on the count of three, you're going to jump through the hoop, or I'm going to shoot you. On the count of three, you jump through the hoop. What do you know? I'm a genius, because I predicted what would happen and when, and I made matter and energy jump through hoops on command. But don't you think that if I have a gun, and I point it at you, and I force you to jump through a hoop on command, don't you think that that will destroy any possibility we have of friendship? And so what this culture does with its attempts to control everything is to destroy all possibility of relationship. And relationship is based on a willing other doing things for you because the other one wants to, sharing gifts with you because the other one wants to, as you share gifts with the other one. That's relationship. And so we can think about this in terms of rivers, that you can live next to a river forever, and the river will continually bring you new gifts every year. It will bring you soil. It will bring you food. It will bring you water. It will bring you a place to poop. Because in the Amazon, I love this story, that there was this guy down in the Amazon wandering around. He was collecting fish, which is horrible, but for the tropical fish industry, so let's leave that part aside, which is really horrible. Anyway, he's wandering around and wading through waist deep in the Amazon, and some big fish comes up and starts poking him in the butt with its snout, and he's like, what the hell's going on? And the native people with whom that he was with said, the fish wants you to poop because this is what it eats. So that's a wonderful waste disposal system. Just like slugs and the soil is a wonderful waste disposal system. When you give it food, that's what we're supposed to do, is enter into relationships where each of us is giving what we can. And there's this great line. Oh God, who was this? Charlotte Perkins I never can remember if it's Gilman or Gilmore. I'm so sorry. I have a block on that. She wrote the story about the wallpaper. She's fabulous. Anyway, she has a great line about how the Buddha went out and saw that everybody is eating each other, and that's really horrifying and bad, and life is suffering. And she changed one word, and it changes everything, which is she went out and she saw that everybody is feeding each other, and it was all wonderful. And that's this notion of enslavement infuses, infects, and destroys every aspect of our lives. From the most, it affects how we perceive interpersonal relationships. It affects how we perceive adult-child relationships. It perceives our relationships with non-humans. It infects and destroys our relationships with non-humans. It affects our very epistemology. And one of the important things to remember is that if you force someone else to bend to your will, you may certainly win in the short run, but you won't in the long run. Every dam is going to fail. You can kill a river in the short term, but in the long term, it will erode the dam. And in the long term, one of the reasons that I am so prolific is because I don't demand anything from my muse. I approach with open hands and I say, you want me to write something? I'm going to write it. And here's a great example. That when I was writing A Language Older Than Words, I wrote the first 70 pages and I sent it to my Madison Avenue agent. I had a very muckety-muck agent at the time. And the agent told me, if you take out the family stuff and the social criticism, I think you'll have a book. And I fired her on the spot. And the point is, I wasn't going to force my muse to say what the muse didn't want to say. I was going to follow the muse wherever she led. And for that loyalty, I have been greatly rewarded. And that's the thing I don't think that we understand as a culture, is that truly, if you approach and enslave others, you do get short-term rewards. But if you approach others with open hands and don't try to force them, sure, sometimes you don't get anything out of it, but in the long run, you get much, much, much more.